Welcome to episode 259 of After the Credits, your little Tobo Media spew for March. I am your co-host, Marina Antunes of atcpod.ca and quitter.us, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Colleen Ra, Princess of Power.
Nice.
How the hell can I follow that?
By the power of Grayskull. You don't.
You're Dale man?
I don't know. Of ATC Pod, yeah.
Sure.
The Dale Nader, I don't know.
ATC man.
I like it. That's right. I don't think it would sell a lot of t-shirts, but it could work. So guys, what have you been watching? This is weird when you do it the second time
around. Oh, yes. We messed up the our audio technician, who we're going to fire.
No, we're not.
You know what? Your days are numbered at this studio, mister.
That's right.
That's it. They are. You're going to be fired from Studio 42 and hired for Studio 6x9. I know you get to name your studio, but for now, until you figure it out, it's 6x9.
I like it. But really, what have you guys been up to?
Working nonstop, overtime and on weekends, and basically passing out from exhaustion at all points.
That would be me, like after a day of what you do. Maybe half a day.
Pretty
sure I probably wouldn't make it past the 4-hour mark.
It was the day where I had like 48,000 steps, 157 floors, and about 7 hours plus of full-on physical activity, according to my Fitbit. So my heart didn't explode, though. It never went above 157 beats per minute.
Oh, good for you.
So as such, I have basically been passing out. I haven't watched much of anything. So my list will be small. But it does include lots of Murdoch mysteries, which I pass out and fall asleep to, and then wake up later and going, "What? What's Crabtree doing? I gotta go to bed."
Yeah.
But I also started watching a CBC show called Cavendish, where these two brothers move back to like their hometown that they haven't been to in like 20 odd years. One's really easygoing and doesn't do anything, and the other's like super laid back writer or uptight writer. And so they go back to live with their dad, and this little community called Cavendish is just super weird. Like there's almost like a cult of Anne of Green Gables going on in the town. Because Cavendish
is amazing.
Yeah. So Anne Shirley, lots of Anne Shirley references throughout this. Oh, and
a whole episode
about Fred Penner.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah.
They're not afraid to go to the Canadiana.
At one point, Fred Penner actually makes an actual appearance in it, so it's worth it.
Okay,
it's like,
that's pretty funny.
He was a little after my time, but I still recognize the name.
Literally, at one point, like the guy's like hallucinating, going, "But so I shouldn't kill him, Fred Penner?" And Fred Penner's like, "What? No." Let me ask, does the cat come back the very next day?
Oh, man, I love it.
Oh, that's nice. Holy shit.
I love it.
Yeah, so Cavendish, worth watching.
Oh, Dan might actually enjoy that one, then.
You know what? To a certain extent, it reminded me a little bit of the just absolute unmitigated weirdness of a town in Dog River, Corner Gas.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, because the only thing we're watching on CBC is Kim's Convenience, because it's Kim's Convenience.
Yeah. No, I think if you like Corner Gas, there's a likelihood that you could get down with Cavendish.
I'll let him know, because he'll probably want to see that then.
All right.
I'm writing it down. This is happening. Dale, what have you been up to?
Oh, man, I feel like I'm trying not to overload for missing a month, but...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's right. Bring it on, mister.
Not so much for the TV shows, but for the movies. I pared some back, but...
Yeah, I had to cut down my list. I've been watching a lot of shit.
Oh, yeah, I've been watching some crap, too. But Star Trek Discovery, still enjoying.
Yep.
It's really good. The last couple... Anyway, nope, still enjoying. We'll just leave it at that. Orville's been kind of interesting. Like, I have this weird relationship. Like, I mostly like it, and it really feels like the old Star Trek, but sometimes the humor seems a little bit thin almost, or, like, really predictable.
Yes. It's the same with all of Seth MacFarlane's.
Yeah, I still like it. Yeah, like, I still enjoy it. But it doesn't feel like it's going to win any awards. The one
from last week where they become addicted to cigarettes.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Cracked me up.
My God.
So bad.
My God.
Oh, it was pretty good.
Yeah, and Adrian Plecky and the woman that plays the doctor.
Yes.
Like, they feel like the anchors.
Agreed.
Like they're just, like, they have the presence on there to let the other people who aren't like, quite there.
Yes.
In terms of, the guy that does Bordas is like.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Is got that shtick down. But anyway, I'm really liking Charmed, the reboot. You've heard me say this. Yep. I've already, I said it on in reviews. Like, I need some light, bright, predictable, just kind of make me smile kind of shows.
I have a show like that I've been watching.
And Charmed is doing it for me as it's bad as it is. It's not going to win any awards, but it's got heart.
Yeah,
I like
that's
it.
That's what counts.
What really is blowing me away again is, like, I'm really liking The Magicians this season. It's continuing to be good, and I'm, like, constantly surprised at where they're going with the stories, like, in a good way.
I feel like I need to watch that show because it would, like, be a Marina show, but I just didn't really like the first half of season one.
You know what? The thing, it has changed so much. Like, it really, if you just skip to maybe even the third season, like, there was a transition over the second season. Like, the first season kind of established it, and it had what amounted to the characters that were progressing the story. And it started to change up in the second season. And then the third season was, like, really different. Okay. And this season, they're subverting that yet again.
Yeah, because it feels like every time somebody brings it up, I'm like, man, that's a show that I should be watching because it feels like it's a Marina show. But,
you know,
I just couldn't get into it.
The starting was so centered on a character that was kind of annoying.
Which is probably why I couldn't really get into
it. I can understand that. Like, and the thing is, like, if you weren't kind of a white male wanting to marry Sue, the whole, like, yes, I'm like the Harry Potter kind of thing, only a little darker, it might not have appealed to you. Like, the women characters didn't really come into their own.
Yeah.
But they have now. Like, okay. in like 1000%, and the character arcs for all of the characters, and just they haven't had quite the pleasant, like, joyous writing from the last season. Like, I marvel at the pop culture talk where they were talking in code using pop culture reference. Like, that was just so brilliant, and they had subtitles. It was great. Anyway, so yes, definitely from me, like, 100 pluses for Magicians. Really enjoyed Cardinal. That stuff was over too quick.
Yeah, agreed. The seasons are always too short.
Yeah. And, it's like, this is like, why can't more Canadian networks make this kind of programming?
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that because I just saw a headline in Playback where they were talking about Canadian content and how there's more appetite for it in the US than there is in Canada. Like, the types of shows that are being produced here are actually playing better with American audiences than they are with Canadian audiences.
I would love to read that.
Yeah, I would love to read the entire article because I usually just get I don't subscribe to Playback, so I just get the headlines. But I remember cruising through that one going, oh, that might be interesting.
I can understand it. And, like, that's always, like, regardless of where it's set, right? Like, there's the universal and there's the specific.
You know, it's close, but it's still foreign kind of thing. I've watched something from Russia and I wouldn't really get, but I get British humor like hell because Britain is basically our neighbor. Like, there's an ocean across from us, but
there's that kind of cultural kind of thing where you might pick up more than other, but I'm thinking about, you know, like when you have the coming of age story or the love story or the overcoming, you know, like those kind of universal things. If you have that set in a very specific location, it's okay that it's not.
But I mean, you look at some of the shows that have really done well in the US that are like Canadian productions. They're shows that are very specific. Like, they're a very specific genre. Like, you have the broad comedies, like Schitt's Creek plays really well in the States. Trailer Park Boys was huge. And I mean, they played well here, but I don't think they play as well as they do in the US. And shows like Cardinal, which is like a very dark, it has a very specific audience to begin with, right?
Right.
It's a very dark police thriller, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's gonna have a smaller audience anyways. Vikings, it's about fucking Vikings. It's really bloody, and you know, it's a genre historical show. So I mean, I can kind of I don't fully, you know, I see what they're getting at, but it's also so a lot of those shows have a very specific audience in mind as well. And that audience is a lot smaller in Canada than it is in the US, just by sheer numbers of people watching TV. So
in percentages, yeah.
Exactly.
A smaller percentage still amounts to like a pretty big number
exactly,
down there.
Exactly.
I enjoyed the third season of One Day at a Time, which is unfortunately is the last season. It's a Netflix series, a remake. With Latinx.
Okay. That's
the opening.
I was like, what?
The opening.
I remember.
The Bowser opening from Shaw Na Na was in the original.
There you go. Did not know that. The opening show for season three had Gloria Estefan in a cameo as Rita Moreno's sister. They were arguing. Melissa. Moreno, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, and Stephanie Beatrix from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh.
And it was a lot of fun. So yeah, if you like that kind of, it's like a three camera comedy kind of thing, recommended. For animation on Netflix, The Dragon Prince, I just really loved that story. I just ate it up. So if you like the animated stuff, I mean, it's a kid's thing, but as an adult, I enjoyed it. And I love some of the voices, like the dark elf has this Scottish brogue and I just eat it up. I just can't help it. It's like David Tennant. I just love a good accent. Russian Dolls. Did you talk about Russian Dolls?
Dan and I still haven't watched it.
Oh, okay.
So it's still interesting. On backlog.
I'll say this, like I quit after two and someone said you have to go to at least three and they were right.
Oh, okay.
There's a change up in the story. There's a couple change ups, and after three it got interesting for me. And they managed to take it home and I was not sure where it was going.
Yeah.
So overall I enjoyed it. It didn't blow me away like some of the stuff I was reading. Like some people really, really dug it. But yeah. I enjoyed it. It's a good watch. Same with Umbrella Academy. It didn't blow my socks off.
Really liked it.
Yeah. I still haven't seen
it. The hit people were great. Like some of the relationships.
There is there's a short video on YouTube. I'll see if I can find it. It's the two British guys who are riding the subway, just like talking for 2 minutes. And it is the most glorious thing ever.
Excellent.
I had a good time with that.
Nice.
There was a lot of fun stuff about that, but overall, like the ending just left me a little bit flat.
Mm.
But then the ending, it almost felt like it was the first half of a season.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if it's going to get another season, but I would definitely watch another season if only to see where things go. The thing that I didn't like the most, it's like it's about a family. The family didn't feel real. Like there was something about the writing or the relationships that kind of didn't work, which didn't make it as strong. Anyway, the last one is Turn Up Charlie. It's another Netflix show. It's really fast. It's like 6 30-minute episodes. Idris Elba.
Oh, yes.
Plays the washed up DJ.
I just added that to my watch list.
It's
Idris Elba. I'm like, yeah.
The girl that they have playing the daughter is just like the chemistry between them and the writing. She's like this precocious little brat. And it plays really well. I enjoyed it.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I literally just saw it come up. I'm like, yep, add. The list that Dan, every time he's looking for something, he's like, how big is your fucking list? I'm like, let's just say I'm never going to watch it all.
The nice thing is it is a quick watch.
That's
good. It might be 8 episodes, but they're only 30
minutes
long. But I
didn't realize that's even better. Love it.
And that's I'm watching other stuff, but this is kind of the highlights and maybe a low light.
Okay, so I watched a lot of stuff because I've been trying to catch up on because Spark eats up so much of my time that I fall off of TV shows. So I'll watch like half a season, then I'll binge the rest when I have time. So there is some of that here. And then other shows, it's just shit that I've had on my watch list for months. So this has been gnawing at me because they are in order of... Are they in order of things that I like? Maybe not. Okay. But let's start with A Discovery of Witches, which has been gnawing at me because I keep seeing ads for it. And I'm like, I need to watch this fucking show because it's two people that I absolutely love. How I have not seen this yet. Can I just say this is the greatest show ever?
Is it really?
No, but it's amazing. It's completely made for Marina. So it's based on Deborah Harkness's novel, which I clearly remember the day my girlfriend came home with that book. And she's like, she started reading it. She's like, it's like a crossover between Harry Potter and Twilight with adults at a university. And it's really, really bad. Like, she really did like it, and I never picked up the book. So the TV show is kind of like a take. It actually says it's not like an adaptation. It's, I can't remember what the exact word is that they are
using. A ripoff?
It's basically like
inspired by.
Like, they've taken the characters and they've kind of done their own thing. So, yeah.
They postmanned it.
Sure.
Okay.
So Matthew Good plays a vampire. Teresa Palmer is a witch. The universe is set up so that the races don't intermingle, but lo and behold, they fall in love and shit is about to go sideways. Guys, I watched the entire season in 2 days.
Wow. Is this on Netflix? Or is it?
No. Okay. So funny story here. It is a ITV4 production. It is available on Shudder and Sundance Now in the U.S., it did so well when it premiered on Sundance Now that it almost doubled their subscription numbers.
Wow.
This is crazy. So now they're airing it on A&E. It just started. Or maybe it's AMC. I think it's AMC.
Okay.
So it's just started airing on AMC.
When you said the title, I mistook it for a different one. I just looked it up. It's like, oh, okay.
Okay. So it's... I love it. It's like the perfect Marina show. It's just the right amount of blend of like drama and weird supernatural shit and just crazy romance.
Oh, just
so good.
Just for the record, I have stopped watching Legacy. It got to kind of a boring point. It was interesting for a while there was some mystery, but when the story started kicking in, it got a little bit too, I don't know. It just was like, oh. These stories aren't doing it for me, so
I hear you. You might enjoy this one, though. I really
love it. Just the premise of vampire, and it sounds so reductionist.
Oh, but it's so good. Actually, I really like the universe because they have this council that sort of like keeps tabs on all of the various races, and there are other supernatural races, but we've kind of only dealt with this so far. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Matthew Good and Therese Palmer have really good chemistry. Just saying. So, yes, I highly recommend it. It is a totally
American. I can listen to Matthew Good all day long.
Oh, he's so good. So good. So, yes, I was a big, big fan. I also completely watched all of The Little Drummer Girl in like 3 days.
What?
Couldn't help myself.
What is The Little Drummer Girl?
So this was also on AMC around Christmas of last year, actually. Okay. Just before it. It's based on a John Le Carré novel, so it's a period piece.
Oh.
It stars Florence Pugh, Michael Shannon, and Alexander Skarsgård. And it's about the Mossad, and they hire this young woman, Florence Pugh, who's a British actress. And they basically turn her into an agent.
How did I not hear about this?
It is, the entire thing is directed by Chan Wook Park, the director of Old Boy.
Yeah.
It's glorious.
Okay.
It's like high. It's not action packed. Like, it is a spy thriller, but it's like a spy thriller, like a Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. It's very spy-y.
Nice.
It's so good.
That sounds fun.
It's so good. It's stunning.
If I saw that, I skipped over it.
Yeah, and Michael Shannon is so awesome in it. Oh, the whole thing is just, it's great. To the point where as soon as I finished this, I watched the documentary that I'd been sitting on that you had sent me about the best spy movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I watched that. And then I watched Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy because I hadn't seen that in a long time. And then I'm like, I think I need a Wook marathon. So I watched a couple of his movies. Yeah, I've had a moment. It was really good. I finished the second part of Outlander season 4. Really good season. Really enjoying it. They've now got her daughter in like the period setting. So things are progressing nicely. Really enjoying the season. And Sam Heughan actually had like up until this point, he's been like, he's a good solid actor, but he hasn't really been given a whole lot to do. It's really about the women. He actually had a little more to do this season. He totally lived up to it. I thought he was really, really good. Watched the second half of Suits season 8. Really liking that show. I can't believe there's only one season left. I'm excited. Travelers season 3. I finally finished the show. Yeah. You know, it's not often that you watch a show and you're like, you know, I'm satisfied by that ending. I was quite satisfied by the ending. Even though it's a bit of a ripoff, I was satisfied by it.
I was not sure. I'm still not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wish there was more because I really do like that show. But I mean, I think with like 2 episodes left, I'm like, how the fuck are they going to end this? Because they had so many balls in the air.
Well, and then when people start dying, you're like, oh, something's up here.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I was like, what's going on? Like, how are you going to wrap this in a way that makes sense for the characters and doesn't completely piss off everybody? And I thought that they did a fairly good job of it. I mean, it's kind of a, you know, I don't want to specific because it's kind of an interesting way that they do. I mean, it's nothing new, but it worked for me. I was quite happy with the way that it all came together at the end.
I wasn't entirely unhappy. I was like satisfied, but I was really, I'm always hoping for that, you know, that big moment where you go like, oh, yes. Amazing.
Agreed. And
I didn't get that. Agreed. But I was happy that I felt like they did right by the characters.
Agreed. One thing that I think is worth noting is you can totally tell that the third season was a Netflix production because the F-bombs are so apparent when you watch the entire season kind of like in close proximity. Because, yeah, there are a lot of F-bombs this season. Things that you would not see on cable, let's just say. Also on Netflix, Dirty John. This is the, I guess, the fictionalization of the real-life story of John Meehan. It's really good. It's Connie Britton and Eric Bana. And Eric Bana plays John Meehan, who was this womanizing con artist who basically just serial dated women and ripped them off for decades, pretending to be a surgeon. No, not a surgeon, an anesthesiologist. It's pretty crazy. The performances are really good. The real life story is insane.
Yeah, so not a story I'm interested in.
I quite enjoyed
Netflix
it.
Netflix really good. Wanted me to watch that one.
Oh, they kept... Oh, yeah. It's pretty solid, though. I finally watched Bodyguard with Richard Madden. It is as good as everybody says it is.
Oh, I only got about 3 episodes in. Oh,
so good. So good.
Yeah.
I really dug it. Though the best part, maybe not the best part, but one thing that's really fun, I watched Richard Madden and I can never remember his name, the guy that's going to be playing Elton John in the new movie, Rocket Man, Terrence Aragon, I want to say.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep. So they've done a carpool karaoke, which I have discovered is free on Apple TV. So if you're so inclined, you can watch all the episodes, and there are some classic ones there. But they do like a 20-minute episode where they drive around London together, and at one point, because they're in London, Terrence's like, well, everybody has seen Bodyguard. We should test this. So Richard Madden is like under a jacket, and he's rolled down the window, and they're like, excuse me, just people, random people on the street. Have you seen that show, The Bodyguard? Or Bodyguard, it's just called. So everybody's like, ah, yeah, oh, what did you think? Oh, it was really good. And then Richard Madden comes up from underneath the jacket, and one guy's like, yeah, no, I really couldn't get in. It was pretty funny. And then finally, perhaps, do I want to say this? I want to say this. Probably the best thing Netflix has ever put money into, and probably not enough money because animation never gets enough money, Love, Death, and Robots.
It's on my list.
I saw the first two episodes.
On my list.
Fucking amazing.
The battle between the sort of gorilla-esque versus the dinosaur-esque.
They only get better.
Really?
You can actually... I don't know. So, I mean, quality-wise, the quality is consistently amazing.
Wow.
The styles are very different because the filmmakers are quite different. Yeah. So you get varying styles of animation. Looking at the list of directors was like looking at like a Spark Greatest Hits. And there were legit moments where I'm like, I've fucking seen something by this director. I know I have.
Yeah.
Go and look. I'm like, yeah, I have. I mean, it's amazing how you start to sort of pick up the similarities. But let me just say, by far the greatest thing that they've ever done. My one complaint. They didn't tap one female animator.
Mm-hmm.
So my understanding is that I think it's Chris Miller who sort of put everything together with David Fincher, because this was what Heavy Metal was going to be, and then it kind of took another turn. It looks from looking at the list of directors that they did talk to, they've picked directors that had sort of a studio backing or had people that could work with them. So, I mean, obviously, I don't think Netflix spent a lot of money on it. I really hope that for season two, they do have female animators, because I think it's a great way to showcase the work that they're doing.
Yeah.
But it's, like, stupendous. Generally speaking, I loved more than disliked all of the episodes.
The first two episodes kind of blew me away, especially the first one, like, with the battle sequence, like... What am I watching?
It's pretty crazy. Yeah. The final one that Istvan directed, he works for Digic, which is a Hungarian, I want to say, studio. They do a lot of cinematics. It looks like a video game cutscene. It's 16 minutes of soldiers fighting zombies.
Wow.
It looks fucking spectacular. Like, it started, I'm like, okay.
And you didn't fall asleep?
No. Wow. Dan and I watched this in 3 days, overnight, like after dinner.
I don't know. Night. I mean, I would have. I don't know if I could sit through like a 16-minute battle scene anymore.
Well, it's not really a battle scene. Like, okay. There's actually a story.
Okay,
but it feels like. I mean, it is towards the end. It's like 3 minutes of nonstop battle.
Okay. I'm convinced if you watch the first episode, you'll be like, "Holy shit!"
This is us. We started it on a Monday night. By Wednesday, we were finished.
Like, okay. What? If I wasn't so effing tired all the time, I would have devoured it.
Yeah,
this is dangerous for my packing.
Oh, think of it this way: each episode is at most 16 minutes long.
Oh, perfect.
They range between. I mean, it's animation, right?
Yeah,
freaking expensive. So they range between like 10 minutes. The average is about 12, and then the longest is 16. So they're all fairly short. So yeah, we could watch like 2 or 3 a night, sometimes 4.
Huh.
But yeah, we watched it in 2 nights.
Nice.
Do you remember how many episodes in total?
16, I think.
16.
Hmm. Yeah, it's. I think probably the best thing Netflix has done.
Kimmy Schmidt.
Sure.
Okay.
I think you're wrong, but whatever. All right, movies. Have you seen any?
No.
Probably think no.
Literally, there's nothing on that.
Damn.
More than 60 minutes and I'm out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I have seen movies. So, can we talk about Revenge?
Yeah, sure, we could talk about Revenge.
Because I was holding on, I'd seen it, and then you were...
Yes.
What did you think?
I really liked it. I didn't love it, but I really liked it.
Oh, cool.
I'm trying to think back, because I think I talked about it at some point. Did I talk about it at some point? I don't know.
You might have cryptically talked about it.
The one about the woman that goes with the guys on the hunting trip?
It's a revenge thing, yeah. Like, a woman is basically... dating one of the guys or having an affair with one of the guys, and his two buddies show up at this like remote hunting lodge, and one of them rapes her, and then
they leave her for dead, and then she comes back.
Basically, the one guy is an asshat and does the crime, and the other two cover it up for him, and she doesn't take it lying down.
No,
she shouldn't.
Like,
yeah,
it was
really good.
It's like really bloody.
Okay, I shouldn't say really good. I really enjoyed it. I had some issues with the story, and I think it's a little bit too long. I don't think the story sustains itself for long enough. I mean, at some point it just turns into, as much as I love watching people killing people, at some point it just kind of gets repetitive.
Having seen, like, I Spit on Your Grave.
It was better than that.
Yeah, exactly.
By a long mile.
And the criticisms of that, like that whole genre is like, I don't know. And then I read this review that said it earned its violence.
I think it does.
And I was like, I was really intrigued by that and watched it and thought, oh, okay, well, this, you know, it's interesting because it's clearly in that line of the victim gets more powerful in circumstance. Like, it's not reality exactly. But, I mean, it was satisfying because it was a revenge.
Yeah, no,
revenge totally. Thing. So,
yeah.
I'm never quite sure. Like, this is a problem being, you know, the male eye. I'm never quite sure.
But I mean, I think that you go probably beyond what most people do because, I mean, I'm not a black woman. I'm not a black man. And I still watch those movies and I don't often think of it critically like that. And you've always got that in the back of your mind, which I think is really, really, like, commendable. So the fact that you even have that thought, I think, is important. For me, like, as a woman who's never really encountered anything other than, like, general douchery, I thought it was really good. I mean, I enjoyed it for the fact that, I mean, it's a woman taking, you know, revenge on some wrongdoing to her, and you don't see enough of that. And, I mean, I like violent movies, well, you know, in general, so I'm okay with the violence, generally speaking. And I mean, I think it's an interesting point, the whole owning its violence. I'm not quite sure about that. I mean, it's obviously not real because nobody comes back from that.
Yeah.
certainly not enough to, like, take down everybody.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was certainly enjoyable. And at the end, I was snickering. I mean, you don't see, maybe it's because we don't see enough of it. And really, what I think is the highlight of the movie is actually probably, like, the making of it. Like, I think it looks really interesting. I think the choice of color scheme is really interesting. I just thought, like, visually it was a really striking looking movie. But I mean, I really enjoyed it. I couldn't recommend it to everybody.
Yeah, it's.
I certainly love it.
Something with that much blood generally isn't my cup of tea. But I didn't regret watching it.
Yeah. That final sequence though in the house.
That was insane.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That was so insane. I'm actually kind of glad I saw it. Like, that was
like almost, it's the kind of thing that
almost batshit crazy. I mean, the amount of blood.
You can just imagine that at some point down the road somebody is going to recreate or, like, harken back to that. You're going to be like, I know where that's from.
On Netflix, A Futile and Stupid Gesture, which is about Douglas Kenny from National Lampoon, who I had never known existed, but he's responsible for, like, Animal House and the National Lampoon movies and a whole bunch of other stuff along that line.
I'm surprised Dan hasn't made me watch this yet.
I watched it a while back, and it was good. And it's sort of like some of the cast members from, like, SNL, like, they had some guy play Chevy Chase, and you just realize what a creep Chevy Chase was. Yeah, like,
it just confirmed my bias about Chevy Chase.
I always thought there was something iffy, and if this is anything like truth.
And they did some really interesting breaking the fourth wall with it.
Yeah,
which was, like, I'd never quite seen done before. So just from that point of view, it was kind of interesting. But the guy's story was quite interesting. Like, I just never knew. Hmm. Hopscotch from 1980 with Walter Matthau. I don't know if that rings any bells, but he plays a spy. He's almost like a Jason Bourne level of expertise, but nobody dies. It's interesting in that it's a very chill, laid back movie. But I mean, like a lot of those movies, not especially plausible. It was kind of fun watching that again. To the Bone, written and directed by Marty Noxon. It's about anorexia.
Yes. With Lily Collins.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that one.
I found it really interesting. I didn't feel like I liked how it it felt like it was dealing with a lot more of the issues for real, but I didn't feel like it really engaged with the thing head on. And I'm not, so I was kind of left with like, I don't know what you want me to feel about, like, I don't know exactly what you were trying to say. Like it almost felt like a slice of life, but it wasn't kind of conclusive. And I come at that from somewhat like my sister had a friend who had anorexia and struggled with that like well into her 20s. So some personal experience with that. It was, but I'm glad I watched it. It was interesting and not something that we see a lot of like addressed the way that that was addressed. Mm-hmm. Close. Naomi Rapace is a personal protection bodyguard.
Oh yeah. I saw that.
It was like unremarkable, but I just liked watching her.
I agreed.
Go through the moves.
Yeah. Agreed.
Gunhead from 1989. In this movie, it's not unatanium they're looking for. It's Tex-Mexicum.
Tex-Mexicum?
Tex-Mexicum, yes.
What the fuck?
It's like Tex-Mex cheese. They yes. just haven't figured out the actual formula.
This is like anime before they were doing anime. Like it's a Japanese-American some sort of... crazy ass military future.
If only we could put look at Colleen's face onto a podcast.
It is some crazy stuff. Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Selling me, baby.
The Purge election year, which I actually kind of liked.
You're not the first person to say that. On my watch list.
It's not going to win any awards, but it was kind of a solid social commentary along the lines of the other films.
Okay.
Rocket Ship XM from 1950. So bad. So spectacularly bad. If you want to see how far women have come in film, watch this movie. Well, don't. I mean, it's painful, but...
No Rocket thanks. Ship XM.
You will be throwing things at the screen. Put a shield in front of
like, either that, or I'll literally be starting its fan club.
My buddy and I were almost falling off the couch, groaning. It's just
that sounds awesome. I love terrible.
Oh.
Yes, she does.
Yeah,
man.
Schlock, man. Schlock.
This will float your boat for sure.
I'm already excited. Was that Netflix?
He had it on DVD.
Okay,
we do a DVD night every week, so he brought it over.
Where does Ian find this shit? Oh,
He's got I think like 1,500 DVDs.
I just hit 1,000. I logged my 1,000th DVD the other day.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
I'm glad I got rid of like 90% of my collection.
You can't tell there's 1,000 movies in my house, though. Maybe you can.
How to Train Your Dragon Hidden World. It was a nice wrap up to the trilogy. I liked it. Level 16. I just kind of want to shout out. It's a low budget Canadian production.
Yes.
And I'm a fan. And they did a lot with what they had.
Yep. She always does.
The big reveal at the end, like, didn't make a lot of logical sense. Like, I groaned a little bit. Like, because the lead up was, like, she did suspense really well. Like, I definitely loved the whole building of what the mystery of the story was. But when we got to it, actually was, logically it didn't make sense. Emotionally, it was right there. Like, like the whole point of where it was leading up to, it's like, yeah, okay, no, I understand that, but it's still it took me out of the story kind of in the final moments.
I really enjoyed it. For me, quite honestly, the thing that I like most about Level 16 is that Danishka's finally getting some recognition, because she's a really talented Canadian filmmaker that people haven't really seen a lot of her movies. She has really fantastic vision. Like, if you've seen any of her other movies.
I haven't.
Yeah, it's clear that she has like a very unique vision. So I'm just glad that she's finally getting to make some other stuff and getting some recognition for it too.
I kind of felt like, well, and the other thing too is like, it wasn't that they were bad, but the two lead actresses just weren't quite up to the
young women. Yeah. I actually thought that they were okay.
They were okay. No, they were more than okay. Like I got to the end, but it was like, if the movie was going to hit next level, like if they had had a really remarkable actress in one of those roles.
Well, and I think
Sarah, like if Mads Mikkelsen can pull off a polar.
Yeah.
You know, if they'd had somebody exceptional in that role, it would.
Well, that's the thing. And I think that's kind of unfortunate because Sarah Canning is so good as well. It probably doesn't help. But I really generally enjoyed the movie. I thought it was really good. I mean, I would recommend it.
Yep. Was a tentative recommendation. I don't think it would be for everyone, but it definitely.
Oh, yeah, no.
It had heart. And yeah. Like I say, I wanted to give it a shout out. Isn't it romantic?
I really liked.
Yeah, I liked it too. It wasn't perfect, but it's just like I was smiling at the end.
Yeah, me too.
I liked it.
I was in there the whole time.
So I was really glad that there were a few moments where
Rebel Wilson
just almost went over the edge.
But she doesn't quite. Which is what works.
Some of the humor in there just left me laughing.
Yep.
Like, just watch the trailer. You'll know what I mean.
It's charming. If you like the trailer, you're going to like the movie, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It's a total Colleen movie.
Age of Adeline. Age of Adeline, which is from like 2015 with Blake Lively.
Oh my God, why? Are you reading my mind? Oh, I literally just rewatched this.
Well, it showed up on Netflix and it's like, give it a try.
Okay, I totally just rewatched this the other day because I'm like, I have this on DVD.
I'd never seen it before.
Oh, I'm a big fan.
It was charming. It's
super charming.
So my only complaint about it is it almost didn't really have a point, or maybe the point was just lost on me. But
what is just romance?
It's just, but it was charming.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Contrived and charming.
Yes, I really, really like that movie.
Okay, well, it's, like I said, it was
very
like.
Very romantic. I needed a romantic kick, and that's what I watched. So, hey.
I went in with low expectations. It more than exceeded my expectations. It's like, it was a fun watch. And
I quite like that one. It's just funny because like that's just such a random thing to watch. And I'm like, I literally just rewatched it.
I liked Captain Marvel. Go see it.
I enjoyed Captain Marvel. I don't regret seeing Captain Marvel. I'm still trying to get over the fact that she wore a Nine Inch Nails t-shirt through like 90% of the movie, which is just so weird to me. I know it doesn't mean anything to anybody, but as somebody who is actually wearing a Nine Inch Nails t-shirt today, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the pop culture references don't work 90% of the time. The music doesn't work 90% of the
time.
Really? Yes. That fight sequence, to No Doubt, is so bad.
Wow.
So bad.
Our experience is different. Maybe that's because we're kind of different generations.
Well, and this is the thing. Like, this is, like, the references that they're making are those were my teenage years.
Yeah.
So to me, like, it's like the guys that like the movies that make these references because they're referencing your childhood, right?
Yeah.
This is referencing like the time in my life where I was becoming who I am. And I just found it kind of cold and shoved in there for like no apparent reason. So to me it was wasted. And that hoodie is fucking badass.
That's a leather motorcycle jacket that my friend Lee Aaron.
We're gonna have to post this. This thing is
my friend got a custom Captain Marvel leather.
It's pretty
motorcycle jacket. It is sweet.
So I mean, I like the movie.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong. I think I would like to see more Captain Marvel. I thought they did a really good job of it. Generally speaking, I had most of my issues are small quips.
Yeah.
But I still think that fight sequence doesn't work.
Okay.
At all.
Fair enough.
Like, I'm sorry. I'm just a girl and the fighting, the two things do not go together.
Okay.
That sequence only works once the soundtrack comes in.
Okay.
Other than that, that's like my major. I'm like, the song started and I'm like, what the actual fuck?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, it's not a perfect movie.
No, but I mean, it has a lot of stuff that works. Like the friendship with her and the other woman, the other pilot.
Oh, yeah. Rambo?
Her name? I don't actually know. I would never know.
I have forgotten.
I thought that was really well done.
The kid was fun.
Yeah.
The whole relationship with Samuel Jackson.
Nick Fury. I agree. That was a lot
of
fun.
Was great.
Yeah.
I wasn't as nuts about the cat, but the cat was fun.
The cat was a lot of fun.
The some of the change-ups, because I've never read the comic.
Yeah, neither have I.
I thought, well done in the sense they were foreshadowed kind of appropriately. So it wasn't too much of a surprise, but it was, for me, with my level of like knowledge, it was fun.
Yeah, so, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, there's like a lot to recommend about the movie.
Agreed.
But not perfect.
No, I mean, we walked out and I said to Dan, it's no Wonder Woman.
The technology references, I laughed my ass off. Yeah,
totally.
I don't want to spoil them for anybody.
Totally.
I rewatched Colossal, Anne Hathaway by Nacho Vigalondo.
Yeah.
Such an underrated film. Like, agreed. This really should have gotten more play.
I don't love it. I don't know. Something about that movie doesn't play that well with me. But
really,
generally speaking, okay. I really enjoyed it.
I just thought the way it handled like addiction and relationships was really novel.
Yes, and, that is for sure.
And having rewatched it the second time around was just fine. Like not like some films, you know, you're like, oh,
okay. Yeah,
this was still good. I still enjoyed it. Ralph Breaks the Internet, good fun, not as good as the first for me.
Agreed.
Kind of too close to being a special movie of the week, it felt like. But
yeah,
okay.
I could go with that. I was very underwhelmed. So
yeah,
it was Disney princesses were legitimately the best part of that entire movie, and that was in the trailer. So
Gal Gadot. Yeah, I mean there was some great moments in there, but that almost feels too long.
Well, yeah, and that entire like internet story feels like a second movie. Like it actually feels like a second movie, like a third Ralph movie. I don't know. The whole thing just kind of felt disconnected.
Thank you. I felt like it just needed to be harshly edited down to like an hour and a half.
Yeah,
like get to the core of the story you're trying to tell. There were probably some moments that I would hate to lose, but
the DVD extras.
Yeah, seriously.
If they still have those.
Another really crazy movie, Where Do We Go From Here, from 1945. This was such a hot mess. I don't even
calling
know
another
what
one for you.
like some guy who is 4F, which means you can't get into the army, really wants to go into the army.
Flat feet. I forget what the four.
Some genie shows up and he's like transported through time, and I'm just like, what the hell are you trying to say here? Like, and it was cheesy. It was a musical. The songs were done by some famous guy that did songs. So there was, and I'm trying to. And this was another one that Ian brought over, like my friend with the video collection. He said, yeah, I bought it because all of these sci-fi guys were referencing it as like this movie that inspired him. And like there was one scene that had kind of like an E.T. moment in it from way before E.T. was. But it's like, well, I still don't know what the hell this movie was. And I'm reading, you know, like my go-to, like go to Wikipedia where some guy is going to analyze the shit. It's like, it's not there.
I mean, it's so underrated. It's not even Wikipedia.
I found some comments were like, yeah, it sucks. But
all right.
I don't know. So there you go. That was my not so golden oldie. And I finally saw Vice. Interesting movie. I'm glad I watched it. I didn't quite like. What's his name? Was amazing.
Sam Rockwell.
No.
Yeah.
Christian Bale?
Rockwell was good. Yeah, Bale. Like, I would never have known that was Bale.
Sam Rockwell, though, as Bush.
Rockwell was good. Yeah, he knew that
Oscar nomination
too.
is deserved.
He doesn't look like Bush, but every mannerism and thing he does made me think of Bush.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Exactly.
Agreed.
No, there was some great acting in there. I generally like when they play around with, like, the fourth wall and they have those, I don't know what you call them. I'm sure there's a formal name. I'll say embellishment, but that's the wrong word for it, where you have, you know, talking to the screen or doing something as a little aside to explain the story. And they didn't really work for me in this one. I appreciated the story. I think that's why I liked it the most. Well, the performances were amazing. And I enjoyed getting the history because there was a bunch of things that I hadn't put together and wasn't aware of. But overall, as a movie, I can't really say it worked for me.
Yeah. No, I still don't fully understand how this got Academy love beyond acting.
Yeah,
because it just feels like a hot mess.
I'm with you. Yeah,
it's uneven. The story is kind of all over the place. Yeah.
I want to say if you're like interested in politics, go ahead and watch it.
Yeah.
If you're looking for just a good story on a story level, I don't think this will do it for you. There's a lot better movies out there. Yeah. Agreed. And my last one, another one that I finally saw, was Aquaman.
Yeah. I fully support
just Aquaman. Good fun. Yeah. Like my only complaint was some of the CG in it was kind of like took me out of the story a little bit.
And it's weird because some of it is really good and some of it's like, really?
Like you're just like kind of like, oh,
yeah.
Squint
through those moments.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's get a 480 or a 2-something coffee. Yeah.
No, I really, that movie is just so much fun.
And man, Nicole Kidman, right? When she was on screen, she just owned the scene.
She's Nicole Kidman.
Man,
she's so good.
I liked all the performances. I mean, I just had this argument the other day, actually, with the actress that played Mira. Amber Heard.
Oh yeah, who I really like.
She did fine, but yeah. I mean, totally eclipsed by Nicole Kidman.
I mean, this is it. I mean, but Nicole Kidman eclipses everybody in that movie, so there is that too.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my catch up movie list.
Okay, I shortened mine quite a bit. So I watched the world's...
You are a better person than me.
Well, I'm just giving you the good stuff. The World's Greatest Spy Movies, which you sent to me like eons ago, and I watched after The Little Drummer Girl. Marina fully supports this list. Highly recommended. It's just good fun. It's like just over an hour. Captain Marvel, which we talked about. Okay, I finally watched The Hate U Give.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the George Tillman's adaptation of the Angie Thomas novel, which I really liked the book quite a bit. You know, the movie is very dramatic, like over-the-top drama, and I mean, I knew all the beats, and I still fucking cried like 3 times.
Oh, awesome.
I mean, it works.
I'm really fine with trope-tastic movies just working.
I mean, it hits.
I love that.
Like, it hits all the beats that you'd expect, and it totally works, and that was really emotional, and yeah, it did me in. I watched The Wind, which is a Western / horror movie about this woman who's slowly losing her mind. It's a period Western about like the early years of the frontier. And this woman who loses a child and like she's basically losing her mind and she thinks there are demons in the wind or something. Maybe there are, maybe there aren't. I don't know. The movie is not the greatest, but the performances are really good and it looks spectacular. And the fact that it's like a Western, a little bit of a rehash on the Western from a female perspective, I really appreciate it. So I'd say it's probably one worth checking out. Elizabeth Harvest on Netflix, only to tell you, don't watch it. To avoid the fact that it stars Ciarán Hinds and that Carla Gugino's in it, just don't watch it. It's really not good at all. Not good at all.
What was that called again?
Elizabeth Harvest. Elizabeth. It's a really interesting concept that they sort of explain. Like at first it's just like a creepy drama movie and then, well, a drama / sci-fi. And then like they explain it and it just like gets weird. And then it's just bad. It's just not good. Third Frontier. This is J.C. Chandor's new movie with also on Netflix, with Ben Affleck, Oscar Isaac, Charlie Hunnam, Garrett Hedlund, and Pedro Pascal. It's really good. I really enjoyed it. It's solid. I mean, it's not the greatest thing ever, but I definitely would have paid money to see this on the big screen. It's about, so Oscar Isaac is these guys are all former military and they're all now retired. And Oscar Isaac is working as like securities operations for like as a private contractor in South America. And he gets wind of this house in the middle of the fucking nowhere where this guy is stashing millions of dollars. It's like all cocaine money. And so he brings in his group of friends to try to rip off the house when they have like a window. And so they go in and literally the whole house is made of money. Like the money is in the walls. So now they have this giant stash of cash. And this is all in the trailer. Giant stash of cash. They have to get it out of wherever they are. Peru, I think. Except they underestimated how heavy the cash would be because there was way more of it than they thought there would be. So now the helicopter that they have can't take all the cash and they still need to get over the Andes. They underestimate and shit goes seriously bad. It's legit like a good movie. Like Dan and I really enjoyed it. I probably liked it more than Dan did because at some point it's like so over the top. It really works. I really liked it and I really liked Ben Affleck in it.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. And Netflix really wanted me to watch that one too.
I liked it. I would recommend it. It's a good one. And then we watched The Dirt.
Oh, no.
It's so bad. It's not even a made-for-TV movie bad. It's, like, worse than that. But it's somehow really fun still. Because you know that this, like, a lot of this shit actually happened.
It's about a band, right?
It's about Motley Crue.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is, like, it's executive produced by Motley Crue based on their book.
Okay.
And, like, some of this shit is so crazy that you're like, this shit didn't really happen, but it did. And I think that's what's interesting about it, because it's just not even, like, a great movie. But we really enjoyed it for the trash that it is. I say if you're a Motley Crue fan, you might want to look at it. I don't know. We listened to Motley Crue for, like, 3 days after that. So, you know, fine. And those are my movies.
Cool.
I know. Sorry, Colleen.
No, that's fine.
Podcasts.
Yes.
I have nothing new to add.
Really?
What?
Again, I'm a work monkey now.
But I'm shocked.
I don't know. Well, there is one, but it's just like all the other political sort of like Trumpster fire watch sort of films, podcasts. It's called Mueller, She Wrote.
Well, it wins all the prizes for
it. It does have a good name, but like it's no different than almost any of the other ones. They all sort of blend after a while, so it has to be extraordinary to stand out. But other than that, I subscribe to a couple sort of like fictional story podcasts, but I literally haven't even had the time to crack into them yet, so... but what I do have is books. I have two books. I managed to... They're fairly small books, but I got through them.
What is that?
First one is a Preston and Child book.
Of course. It's not a podcast without a Preston and Child
book.
That's
true.
It's not a Pendergast novel. Okay. This is a Gideon Crewe novel.
We knew that this was coming to an end because...
There's still two more. There's more in the works, apparently, but there's two right now. My mom is reading them very slowly. Pendergast.
Okay.
Two more Pendergasts.
Okay.
This is the last of the Gideon Crewe books. I think it might literally be the last because he has, throughout the books, he's had basically about a year to live. And now he's down to like the last week or something.
Oh, so he's going to die soon.
Yeah. Like, they ended on a pretty sort of like, I've wrapped up my affairs. I'm ready to go. So unless they somehow manage to pull one more caper out of the last week, I don't know.
Anything is possible.
Maybe. But this one is called the Pharaoh Key, where his employer has basically closed up shop and gave him no notice. He's suddenly unemployed in the last 2 months of his life. And the other guy who used to work for his employer that was like a security expert... managed to steal one last code out of their kind of thing, so they have an adventure to find like the last tomb of the pharaoh Amhotep in the middle of some desert triangle in a mist oasis. It's like all Lincoln and Preston and Child books. They're batshit crazy in so many different levels. I liked it.
I like it.
And the other one, also with the name Key in it, called The Jefferson Key, which is by Steve Barry. And think pirates, modern day pirates kind of thing, and sort of National Treasure Book of Secrets kind of thing rolled into one just stupid, stupid book.
Hey man, you read it.
the premise is that during the American Revolution, the U.S. Congress or whatever it was at that point, kind of thing, they decided to write into their laws that they could actually basically warrant privateers, and they. One group of pirates banded together to become a family of pirates kind of thing. And they got a letter of marque kind of thing in perpetuity that they could basically do whatever the hell they want. And they're free from any. Yeah. And now it's 2019 and it's not going over so well. And they're directly responsible for the four assassinations of the presidents of the United States because they were trying to limit the power of the pirates. And it's literally ridiculous. And it's all about Thomas Jefferson's code breaking software he made back in whenever. Yeah. Ridiculous. I don't recommend it. But I don't regret it.
I love it.
Perfect. Those are the two books. Yeah.
No books for me. I will report back on David Tennant Does a Podcast.
Oh,
podcast.
Yes.
I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, okay.
He's uneven, and they're definitely, because he seems to be mostly interviewing people that he's worked with in one capacity or another, but I never quite know what to expect. Like, he actually did a former Prime Minister of the UK, Gordon Brown, who vaguely remember, and like a whole bunch of people that he's worked with. Jennifer Gardner was really interesting.
She's a pretty interesting character. Yeah. I follow her on Instagram. That's like, you know,
apparently Elektra.
She in the podcast she did Elektra. Yeah. She did the. She says, like, yes, I'm in my pajamas. And a friend of mine who also listens to the podcast says, yeah, I saw the picture she posted in her pajamas doing the podcast. Anyway, it goes from really conversational to the latest one felt like more of a formal interview, mostly because of the guest.
Okay.
I forget her name, but another comedian he worked with on Doctor Who. I would recommend it if you're into that kind of interview. The other really fun thing is he does not code switch the language if he's talking to a Brit. So if you're not familiar maybe with some of the expressions they have, like pants means underwear.
Fanny.
Kind of thing. Yeah, it's you might miss a point or two, but... there was at least one point where I wasn't quite sure if I was getting the context, but for the most part, thanks to Monty Python and friends, I'm not bad on my UK stuff.
I finally listened to Sci-Fi 25, the origin stories podcast that Adam Savage did last year for Sci-Fi's 25th anniversary. So it was like, I don't know how many episodes there are, 10 or 12 or whatever. And I did not listen to all of them. I was very selective about the episodes that I did listen to because some of the guests I just had zero interest in. But Ron Moore was awesome. Jonathan Frakes was amazing, of course. Frank Oz, which was like probably one of my favorites of the interview subjects, only because I didn't realize how far back his affiliation with Jim Henson went and how he like became even a director. And he talks really fondly about that, which I thought was really interesting. DC Fontana, who was like an oldie of sci-fi.
I remember her Star Trek episodes. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was amazing. And Kevin Kelly, the founder of Wired, was, I think, one of the last interview subjects. And he was really, really great.
And this was Adam Savage from...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he's just the host. And I mean, you can tell that he's obviously a fanboy, but he obviously had like a very specific set of questions because he asks almost everybody some of the same things. But it's just really interesting because the characters, like the people that he talked to, are really interesting. Like some of the ones that I skipped was, there was one on Kevin Smith, which I skipped. The guy that does all the Talking Dead and Talking Whatever shows on AMC, I skipped. So like there were just a bunch that I just didn't care for the people, so I skipped them. But the ones I listened to, I was super impressed with, so I'd highly recommend it.
And that was Sci-Fi 25?
It's called Sci-Fi 25 Origin Stories.
Okay.
And I think it was produced by Sci-Fi Wire. I don't know exactly. I can send you the link because I didn't find it right away when I was looking for it. It's been literally on my podcast subscription thing for like 6 months.
Oh, it looks like it's on YouTube too.
Oh, there you go. And I totally forgot to mention it when we were talking about TV, but I feel like I need to because it's kind of like my thing right now. The Adventures of Sabrina.
Oh, yeah. Enjoyed the... Well, I remember talking about that. So you watched the first?
The second
season's coming.
Yeah, I know. So that's why I started watching it. So I'm 6 episodes in, and delightful.
I liked it. There was one point where she goes too far. See, I'm literally yelling at the screen going, "What are you doing, Sabrina?"
This is the thing. Like, I'm having a hard time in my mind putting together how this show could be so wholesome and so dark at the same time.
I like that part of it.
Completely pulls it off.
And the ants are great.
It's just so genius.
Overall, I liked it, but when it sat with me for a while, I don't think the actress playing Sabrina was quite pulling it off well. I just thought she was kind of a little bit weak. And some of the story, I don't know if you've gotten there yet, but towards the end, it was just kind of like, this is a really weird place to go. So I look forward to comparing notes when we can do it non-spoilery. And I'm definitely there for the second season. Like, there was a whole bunch of it. I like the ants and the three, what do they call them? Like the lead.
Oh, the sisters?
Especially the lead actress there was kind of amazing.
The two ants, I thought, were the best of the entire show.
I really like the cousin.
When she whacks her with the shovel. Oh, the cousin's good too.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out like where are they going with the cousin, but I really like the cousin. I don't know. The whole thing is just, there are some episodes which I don't like quite as much as others. Like the one about the exorcism, like the possession of the uncle of his friend is like.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, the fact that the show feels like something I could like show a kid, but it's also like it has these moments which are so dark and over the top.
You haven't got to the episode yet that I was thinking about where Sabrina, what the?
Well, so this is the thing, like, the fuck? But it is, there are things which are really, really dark. So I'm like, this shouldn't work, but it does. I can't understand it, but I'm loving it. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah.
I'll report back once I've seen it.
That was one of my favorite things about it, is how it is playing around with all of those things, mixing them all up. And
I enjoy it. I'm certainly liking it more than I liked Riverdale.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't make it past the first episode of Riverdale.
I watched like probably the first half of the first season.
I lost interest. I am sad for...
Luke Perry. Me too. I guess no more Jericho.
Yeah.
That's probably the saddest part, is no more Jericho. And no more
Beverly
Hills.
Was there going to be more Jericho?
But there was always the possibility.
Always the possibility.
There was a dream of more Jericho. I love Jericho.
Exactly. Yeah. There was a dream of. There is always the dream.
Was it Jericho? And what was the one where he was a survivor of a apocalypse? Like, everyone was. Only teenagers lived or something. Mm-hmm. All the adults died. Oh. And he was, like, again, portrayed as, like, this... He's now, like, 20-something kind of thing.
Oh, I don't remember this.
It was on for, like, one season.
It rings a bell, but I couldn't...
The kid who played Theo Huxtable was the other guy, his like best friend who like they roamed the earth.
I don't remember
I'm pretty sure it was Theo Huxtable and Luke Perry.
And you know, I'll probably, when Dale says it, I probably have seen it, yeah. And I just can't remember it.
And once you hit about the age 25, you just die. It's like right out of the Star Trek episode where the Grupps, yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. It was a while back. Oh, he's scrolling through it. Okay.
Oh. Dudes and Dragons? I don't know what that is, but wow.
This is going way farther back than that.
Like shortly after 90210?
Probably closer to 2000 than 2010. Oh, he's still scrolling. Whoa.
There's Beverly Hills. Jesus. See, and somebody said to me,
Clone High, Ponce de Leon. Yeah, that's Jeremiah. That's it.
I knew it. I'm like, I know I've seen this show.
Yeah, again, like I'm 32 years old, but I'm playing a teenager.
Because that still works.
Yeah.
That'll be on his gravestone, right?
Oh, man. Yeah.
Died before his time, literally.
Well, the thing is, like, his body of work, though, was so varied that, like, I texted a girlfriend of mine when it happened who was, like, a huge 90210 fan. And she's like, yeah, man, what about this reboot? This is going to suck. And I'm thinking, forget that. This just means I don't
know. No more Jericho.
The possibility of more Jericho is now gone out the window, goddammit.
Yeah.
Anything's possible. We've rambled.
No more Jeremiah.
Yes, we have.
Yeah.
Wow. This is a lock episode.
That's why I couldn't remember the name, because Jericho is close enough that I couldn't.
Yes, so it's true.
It just was force writing over the other thing over again. Yeah. Jeremiah, Jericho.
So we'll be back in a couple of weeks with the
marathon.
May? No, May. It'll be May lineup, right? I don't know.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Because, yeah, no, I'm all turned around.
I don't know.
It's all blending together.
No, April.
No, we did the April episode.
April previews. So this will be
and we record episodes back to back, but release them 2 weeks in between. So
the next time we record, it'll be for
We'll release the April. Preview. Then this one will drop, and then maybe the 24-hour thing will drop or something, or maybe we'll in between. And then comes the May episode.
You will have content.
Content will arrive.
From a new studio, probably.
Yeah. Dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, for dun, sure. Dun. Well, maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
The empty husk of Studio 42.
Well, no, but I mean, if we record in my place, it's not really a new studio, so, you know.
That's right.
There are options.
Studio yep. Denali.
Oh, God. Poor dog. Okay, so come on by atcpod.ca. We will link to all of the things we talked about today, of which there are many. And we know you want to watch them all, so, you know, come join us here. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. So until next time.
We'll see you after the credits.
You're getting old.